Look, I really don't need to hear this from you, okay?
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place Edition. Today's episode is Season 1, Episode 11, A Promise Broken. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello.
Hello. Remember this?
Should we give a peek behind the curtain and say we have not recorded a Melrose Place since 2 weeks before the Beverly Hills 90210 premiere? It's really been a while.
Yeah. It was like July.
Yeah. I think it literally was. And these two topics, one is so dumb and the other is so sad. Like the whiplash between them is really unfair and I resent being put in this position. I'll just say it.
Yeah, same. All right. I also would posit that we are witnessing the pivot.
I agree. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And we will get to why. But first, we have to get through the dumb storyline, which is our B plot. Billy and Allison's latest roommate fight is about privacy. Billy and Allison come home together from getting bored shitless by Jane's home movies, which we will get to, whereupon Allison instantly starts bitching about what a pig Billy is in their apartment. She challenges him to catch up on it on pain of taking her out for dinner at the restaurant of her choice, which is like, it's framed as some kind of a bet, but there aren't really any, like, unless you X, like, there's no parameters.
Yeah, I didn't understand that at all. Didn't understand, like, are there stakes here?
Right.
And not like the kind that come with the baked potato. Like, I don't understand how this is a bet.
Yeah. Although I will say it did take me back to a time when, like, you were so relieved to not have to pay for a meal that yourself that you would even have one with someone that you like medium like if they were going to pay for it. Anyway,
yeah.
The next day, Allison's in the shower and can't really hear when Billy yells to her that he grabbed her laundry and will do it with his. And since I've seen TV before, I assume this is going to end with Billy accidentally shrinking one of her precious sweaters in the dryer.
Yeah.
Or... Stain
I thought
your
it was going to be the washing one red item with the whites.
Uh-huh, that's the next thing I was going to say.
Yep, time-honored. It's neither of those.
Nope. Instead, Billy and Jake, who's in the laundry room when Billy gets there, start grubbing through Allison's laundry and mess with her bra, trying to guess her size. And then Billy puts it on. I'm very upset. This is not okay.
Yeah. I just... It like physically pained me to watch it getting stretched out.
Oh my God.
Never mind that
you,
it
yes.
was going in the regular laundry, not in a lingerie bag.
Mm-mm.
I might be kind of controlling. Who can say? Oh, that's right. My husband. And he will. And he's right.
But men don't get it. Like they don't like bras are not cheap. They are very expensive. It's hard to find ones that fit because sizing is not universal across all brands. And yeah, stretching it out, even though he doesn't actually fasten it, it's like, no, dude, no yeah. to all of this.
Yeah. Also, if you've been with or like passed more than four women on the street in your life, mm-hmm. like do you like the bra and then their estimate of her size? And then the whole thing is kind of like out of character and dopey for Jake.
Yeah.
Like, not that I think Jake is whatever feminist bike fixing guy.
Yeah.
But he's not this kind of troglodyte. Anyway.
No. Well, so what happens is Allison appears to take her bra back. She doesn't say anything to either of them, but I feel like the actors and not necessarily the writers added this tiny touch where she glares at Jake more than Billy as yeah. kind of a nod to like their GED buddy bonding, where it's like, I expected better from you. Because yes. I kind of did. I know what you mean, Sarah.
Yeah, that's really what I was saying. That it's like, you know, not that he's, again, woke feminist guy, but no. I would expect a higher class of, like a different, more mature class of douchery from that guy. Like, it just doesn't seem like his way to sell her out like that.
Yes, I agree. You don't have to be a great feminist to be a friend to a woman. And
yes,
we thought exactly. he was, and this is not how friends act.
He looks great, though.
Yeah, there's lots of gifts from this scene, which you can see in the visual aids. So Billy comes home that night, goes straight for Allison's closed bedroom door, and tries to turn it without knocking, kind of proving her point when he finds out it's locked. And she opens it and tells him that she had Jake put it in that day as a precaution, and Billy's all insulted, kind of like she was when she caught him clowning around in her bra earlier. He tries to defend himself by saying she barely missed them singing the praises of her bra, but she's
not
more focused.
How you fix this situation, dumb shit.
Oh, no, no, no. She thinks they were getting too close and that she needed this reminder that she and Billy are just roommates. And he guesses that this means the cleaning bet is off, and she agrees that as long as he pays his rent, she doesn't care about him doing the housework, which is, like, not a solution to the problem. Like, just put up a chore wheel and don't talk to each other. That's how you solve this.
Yeah. But I do wonder, though, I don't know if you felt this, but there were several junctures in this storyline, as stupid as it was, where I felt like they may have been trying to foreshadow a history of trauma.
Yes.
And needing to set these boundaries more, perhaps, than some other people.
Yes. And then when we find out what her reason is behind being weird about her bra and her breasts, it's like, okay, yeah, but that doesn't really feel like how she was acting it.
Yeah. And it also didn't feel like that was a lie that Allison made up. It felt like
right. That
was the writer's solution. And it's like, okay, but we'll get there.
We will. Billy doesn't think they can pretend not to be friends, but Allison says she's not pretending. And later still, Billy tries to use Allison's concern about a neighbor's crisis, which we will get to reframe the narrative surrounding his thoughtlessness and her anger about it in clip two.
Makes our fight seem pointless, huh? Look, Allison, what I did, I admit, I was really immature.
I would so rather not talk about this right now.
You're right. It's not worth it. We're both acting like idiots.
No. You acted like an idiot.
Come on, like you didn't overreact? I mean, if someone come through the door, they would have thought I had committed a capital offense. All I did was just...
I don't believe you.
What?
What do you mean, what? You were staring at my breasts.
Oh, please. I was not.
This is exactly why I was so angry. First that whole thing with my bra, and now you are undressing me with your eyes.
You've come completely unglued. You totally lost it.
I always knew this would be a problem at some point, this having a guy as a roommate. Maybe this grand experiment just isn't working.
Oh, just hold it, all right? Since when has this been an experiment? There are people all over this city living platonically.
Yes, yes. All over the city, but with a lot more maturity and sensitivity than we have here. Good night.
Thanks for selling her out, music. Cool.
Yeah, thank you. It's impossible to know how we're supposed to feel about this.
Well, and given sorry, go ahead.
No, well, just gonna say what you said, given the music cue.
And I was thinking, listening to the clip, like, if we're really supposed to think this is funny, wouldn't they have started the cue sooner?
Yeah.
To cue us? And it's like, oh, like, he's putting her pigtails in the inkwell. Soon they'll be engaged. Like, okay. But since there is no music, like, what we expect when you get to the sting is like a dramatic sting.
Yep.
Or perhaps a mouth harp. No, I'm not going to do it.
So sometime later, Allison gets out of the shower, wrapping herself in a towel. And they think this is what you were referring to. She looks in the mirror like she feels unsafe as Billy is on the other side of the door yelling his latest self-justification at her. He's always been the class clown. But then she drops the towel and looks at herself like we still don't know what her deal is, but it looks like I'm scared that he's going to barge in.
Yeah. Or remembering something similar that happened when she didn't have a lock on the bathroom door or something. I don't know.
So the next day, Billy makes Jake break into Allison's bedroom so he can retrieve some tapes and a stereo he lent her. Obviously, he does not relock it because he can't. And then he tosses a can at the garbage. And when it doesn't go in, Jake goes to pick it up. But Billy tells him to leave it because this is where we are maturity wise. Like, oh, OK, live down to everything she thinks about you, I guess.
Sure.
And that night, Billy's still trying to prove a point by listening to said tapes on said stereo in the courtyard with Jake. But Allison just walks right past them without any acknowledgement and then comes out to confront Billy about going in a room. He claims to have tried to call her at work and that he needed the tapes. And she asks how he even got in when there's only one key as Jake hides his eyes. Like, don't start none, won't be none, Jake. Don't.
Yeah, seriously. You should have stayed out of this from the jump. You didn't.
Yep.
Now you live here. Great job.
So inside, when Billy says he wouldn't care if Allison went through his stuff, she immediately calls his bluff and handles his boxer shorts and the copy of Sarah, what magazine?
I didn't even notice. Was it Playhouse?
Oh, it's Playpen, duh. Okay. Everyone's favorite. He says it's for freelance research, and then she loses us all by saying that his interest in women's breasts is sexist as opposed to expected for a straight guy. Like, he is a pig, but that's like one tiny reason why.
Yeah. And it's not like it was torture porn. Like,
right.
It's chill.
Yeah, it's the most vanilla thing he could have had, really.
Yeah,
but anyway.
Pretty much.
So the next day, Billy and Allison see that each other in the kitchen. Billy's being such a child that he won't even look at Allison out of fear that her boobs get in his eye line. So she backs down and agrees that the situation is madness. He also backs down and admits he was insensitive. And so finally, we find out what her deal is, which is that when she was a kid, her mother had a double mastectomy. And it made her feel bad about her body, and her dad made it worse. So that's why Allison hates men's magazines and anything else that makes women attach their self-esteem to their breasts. But she also thinks she needs to talk about stuff more, which, like, yes, maybe, but not with Billy. Like, he's not capable.
Yeah, no.
Then he admits he buys Playpen for the pictures, like, duh, but that's the end of this. So good.
Yeah. Well, and if, you know, given the way that her dad may have been making her mom feel bad about their sexual relationship. Yeah, gross.
On to the A-plot. The Mancini baby declines to join the cast with unexpected consequences. For some reason, Jane thought her neighbors would want to come over and watch home movies of her infancy, and for some reason they have. I don't know why. But
even
then they run out of reels.
They're being super passive aggressive about, like, sleeping on the couch during it. Like, just say you're busy and don't go. I don't know.
Yeah. But then they run out of reels and everyone gets ready to leave. Michael expositing as they depart that Jane's first ultrasound is tomorrow. At the hospital, a pretty red-haired lady doctor, we will later find out is Dr. Shaw.
Ooh.
Is flirtily bantering with Michael about his actually showing signs of being affected by a surgical assignment that conflicts with Jane's ultrasound. The Dr. Levin, who made the assignment, comes down the hall with a passel of interns, and Michael goes over to ask him to change the roster. He will not. He does not give a fuck about Jane's ultrasound and says they can put it on VHS for Michael to watch at home as much as he wants. Nice. So Matt and Jane show up together. Matt just drove her, but also paid the exorbitant hospital parking rate so he could walk her in. I will never stop complaining about this. Anytime they show someone going into a hospital for no reason, if they don't have to. Parking at hospitals, it's insanely expensive. We all know this.
Yeah. Captive audience.
Mm-hmm. Michael comes racing down to give them the bad news. Jane is pissed, but lies that she understands. And Michael basically orders Matt to stay with Jane. And in the exam room, he's mistaken for the father who tries to escape, as any of us would. Now, I made a GIF of this, too. The image on the screen is wild. It's like a psychedelic combination of, like, yellow and green and purple. It's like no ultrasound I've ever seen.
It's like a psychedelic in-color Pong screen meets the Snapchat logo. It's very weird.
Anyway, see it in the visual aids.
Not as weird as Matt's outfit, which is like the most voluminous, like flappy Henley and gigantic gym shorts. Like, oh my God, this is like the best looking dude in the cast, arguably. I know you're going to argue, Tara. That's fine.
Mm.
I was a Matt guy back in the day, but man, do they fug him up? I know it's just the 90s, but oofah.
Yeah. This is also an episode where they've tried to like give him scruff and it looks super fake.
Yeah, it's not. That's not your that's not your facial hair.
Anyway, the doctor passes the wand around and nothing happens, and he and the nurse exchange a portentous look, and then the doctor tells Jane there's no heartbeat. She should have miscarried, but it doesn't always happen that way, so they'll have to do a D&C and to remove the fetus, which, like, accurate, but kind of a rough way to put it. Yikes.
Yeah, I was going to ask what you thought of, like, I thought this writing was, like, a little bit sort of hand-holdy to the audience as to what happens.
Yeah.
But then also really rather tenderly acted by the guy playing the doctor, so it was sort of a weird... This whole storyline was like this. Like it was hitting sort of good beats, but it just felt really flat. I don't know.
Yeah. Should
have been more interesting.
Yeah. But this is the same problem that we had when we found out she was pregnant, which is like, it's too early in our acquaintance with these characters for this big thing to happen where it's like, oh, Jane, it's episode 6 and she's considering having an abortion. In fact, it might've been earlier than that. Now that they think about it.
And then they kind of don't deal with this storyline for weeks on end. Like,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sandy has a stalker. Like, all right.
Lord. So later Matt's waiting in the hall with Michael when the doctor comes out to say the procedure is over with no complications. And he tells Michael an outcome like this is common with a first pregnancy. There's no reason they can't try again. And an orderly wheedles Jane out and she groggily tells Michael she's sorry, which is sad. But flat. As you say, back at the complex that night, everyone's in the courtyard hearing Matt tell the tale of Jane's ordeal when the Mancinis themselves come back. And Jane still seems worn out and subdued, but tells Rhonda it's okay to come in and make her some tea. And then the first thing that's right beside the door when everyone comes in is the crib, and yet no one like comments on it or like tries to stand in front of it or anything. Like they're just not acknowledged. I thought that was weird.
Yeah, that was, even though the camera work clearly wanted us to clock it.
Yeah.
Like, but it was in the bedroom. That was the entire focus of a whole scene. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So Rhonda tries to buck Jane up by saying miscarriages are common, and Allison repeats the line that it's the body's way of responding when something's not right, but Jane is apparently sick of hearing that one, understandably. Just say you're sorry. You don't have to do this. Please don't.
Yeah.
Jake follows Michael into the kitchen to offer to be there if he wants to talk, but Michael isn't the one that Jake needs to worry about. Michael is worried about being there for Jane, and later he stares at himself in the bathroom sink, wasting water, just running in the sink when Jane calls out to him and he comes to bed. And she snuggles up on him and he kind of grunts uncomfortably. And to her question, he says he's all right, but wishes there's something he could have done to prevent the miscarriage. And Jane shares her feelings in clip 3.
I had a baby growing inside me, and now I don't. Something happens when you're first pregnant. Almost instantly, you get the sense that there's something inside you. My breasts began to swell. My body changed, and every day, I would picture it inside me. This little, tiny human being.
There's something about the locution growing inside me that is too babyish for this topic, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I am also extremely annoyed by baby bump, but haven't come up with an alternate. I just feel like, I mean, I realize to say that it's infantilizing is kind of ridiculous also, but it is like, you know, not that we have to be all like, no smiles, serious business, but baby bump, like, she is growing another human. We maybe a little gravitas and not make it all about what clothes she can fit in. But yeah, growing inside, that's why I pulled that. And also this scene is straining so hard to register emotionally. And like you said, like we're still not there with these people contemporaneously with when the episode aired. And from our vantage point now, it's like, I mean, we're witnessing the death of this marriage, basically, but they don't know that yet. And it, I don't know. It's just a miss, this whole storyline. I understand why they had to do it and they tried their best, but Clank.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like everything they're saying about the miscarriage was like, it's the Waddy's way of just cutting something off when something isn't right. Yeah. It's like, oh, like this storyline.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, she opens her heart up and Michael just stares in silence like a weirdo. And later, Billy finds Allison sitting up feeling sad about Jane's pregnancy, which at first I thought was a little narcissistic of Allison. And then I remembered that Allison had been the one to go with the clinic to the clinic with Jane. So fine, I guess she's more connected. In the early hours of the next morning, Jane dreams herself and Michael into the home movie footage that we saw earlier, including wearing her mom's dress. And it sounds like this, clip four.
I mean, not that this was going to work anyway, because it was just like every B-roll signifier from the big book of TV Bad Dreams.
Yeah.
Except that the baby sounds like a malfunctioning rubber ducky chew toy. Not great.
So what we're seeing is she's in the courtyard and she's like got a little bundle and she's getting ready to show all of her neighbors the baby. And then she unfolds the blanket and there's nothing there, which I actually thought if the music wasn't playing would be really upsetting.
Yeah.
Like that's the only part of it that works, I think. But they had to like try and sell it too hard with the discordant lullaby, which like, ugh.
Yeah, seriously. And also the baby that just sounds like, it really sounds like one of my dog's toys just getting stepped on.
Mm-hmm.
While you're passing through the laundry room, like, oh, hey, Duha. Like, that's not what you go for. I should not be laughing during the scene.
Yeah. So while this is going on, Michael's putting the crib and some other loose baby stuff in their storage room in just standard, like, wide open cardboard boxes. So enjoy all the spiders that are about to die on this baby stuff you are clearly hoping to use again.
Also, this scene went on for a week. So that's why we had time to think about that.
Yeah. So Jane is up when Michael returns, but he has to go to work. She knows he can't take a day off because this country hates parents. Like, I didn't even bother to worry about, like, is this believable? Because, like, yeah, of course it is. He doesn't get a day off. But she puts on a brave face about having to call her mother later and break the bad news. And at the hospital, Michael is receiving condolences from good old redheaded Dr. Shaw. She accuses him of being in denial and he bitterly declines her attempts at head shrinking. That night, Jane keeps it together on the phone with her mother and they hear something outside, which turns out to be Sandy and Jake with a little white dog they rescued from the pound. Yeah. Jane is all about this dog while Michael reminds her that the complex has a no dogs policy. And Sandy tells Jane she knows the dog isn't a substitute for a baby, although clearly that's what it's for. But one time someone gave her a dog when she was sad and it worked. Like, oh, great story.
Okay, look, PSA, don't give pets as gifts. Also, two cups twice a day for that dog.
Thank you.
You're going to be rolling him down the street on his side in like a week and a half.
That dog wasn't two cups of dog.
No, like, no, no, that was a cat sized dog. Come on.
Yeah. The next morning, the dog has gotten into the trash, relatable, and spread it around everywhere. Michael tries to discipline him, but he just pees on Michael's medical bag and Jane laughs. So adios, discipline. At work, Dr. Levin chews Michael out for ordering the wrong meds for a patient and then sends him home to get his shit together. And Michael's redheaded pal follows him into the lounge as he packs up and urges him to acknowledge his feelings about the miscarriage and accept that she cares about him. And Michael accuses her of fixating on him because she has no life of her own. And she tells him to go to hell. Well, we'll never see her again. Meanwhile, Matt and Jane take the dog for a good old unleashed walk on the beach like you do with a dog that's already proven it has not been trained at all. And Matt's shorts in the scene are like flapping. I made a gift. It's like he's in a skirt.
He wasn't carried out to sea.
So flappy. Jane calls the miscarriage the first really terrible thing that's ever happened to her. She doesn't even know anyone who's died. And Matt's weird makeup beard says nothing can prepare you. But he thinks it's good that she's talking about her feelings. And then they both notice the dog has run off. You know, that untrained dog, which wasn't on a leash, ran away. Believe it or not, that's what occurred. So Michael gets home late from work after driving around for hours. Jane tells him about losing the dog, and we're supposed to be mad at him for being unsympathetic, but he's disgusted that the dog was off the leash on a public beach and is right.
Yeah.
But then he gets way too mad because he's sublimating like a motherfucker in clip 5.
Look, Jane, I really don't need this now. Actually, we didn't need the dog, but I really don't need this.
Michael, don't get angry.
Why shouldn't I get angry? First, you allow this animal into our apartment. Then you lose it.
I am just as upset.
I don't believe this. Look, Jane, we both know that you were trying to substitute the dog for the baby. So to lose
what?
It was just some way for you to...
Stop it!
What? I can't say what's on my mind. I'm not allowed.
You pretend you feel nothing when we lose the baby, but I lose the dog and all this comes out?
It has nothing to do with the baby.
Yes, it does. You just said it did.
Jane...
Michael, what's wrong with you? Why can't you talk about it?
Look, what am I supposed to say, huh? What do you want me to say?
I want you to say how you feel, Michael. How do you feel?
I told you!
Yes, you're angry. But why? You think it's my fault?
Don't do this.
Because I thought about having an abortion?
Please don't.
And somehow that turned into losing the baby? That's what you're thinking.
Stop it!
Admit it! Michael, say it!
Yes! Yes. Yes, that's what I was thinking.
Let the end of that music, because it really
cut
just
to Jane
stopped.
Seymour running like across a field in a leghorn hat, like that was that was weird.
Yes. Yeah, and that music cue just like stops that abruptly too before the yeah. show comes back. Ugh, weird. But like, is that really what you were thinking? Like, that makes no sense. You're a doctor.
Yeah.
All right. We agree.
This is what I mean about us witnessing the pivot. Like, there are a couple of out of character to date, like harsh responses from him.
Mm-hmm.
That it's like, first of all, I don't think that she would push this hard to get him to admit it. The Michael that we have seen to date wouldn't have right. felt this way. Right. So they're clearly planting some very large seeds right mm-hmm. here, but they're also trying to have it both ways by being like, he's not talking about how he feels because he thinks it's supposed to be about her. And it's like, well, yep. which Michael Mancini are we working with from scene to scene? Right. It's not consistent.
Yeah, totally. So the next day, Michael finds Dr. Shaw at the soda machine and apologizes for being a jerk. But she cheerfully says when she thought about it, he was right. She doesn't have a life. He says he needed to let his feelings out. She was in the way. She thought they were developing some kind of relationship, and he nervously laughs this off. Mm. But she presses that it would be nice to have someone around to blow off steam with. Oh, is that what the kids were calling it in 1992? Anyway.
Yeah.
Dr. Shaw adds that Jane is a lucky woman. And at the beach, Rhonda and Matt post flyers about the lost nameless dog and have a conversation about issues with a capital I in clip 6.
You know, it's just not fair what Jane has to go through. She's a good person. I mean, what'd she do to deserve this?
Well, what does anybody do to deserve something bad? I mean, not everything in life can be reasoned.
Yeah, but you want to blame something.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just think that that's human nature, you know, to want to place blame. Like my friends with HIV and with AIDS, you know, and for them, it's not only the thought, what did they do wrong, but the added indignation of a bunch of bigots who believe that the disease is some sort of punishment for being gay.
Well, a lot's changed. Phew!
Yeah. I mean, that's clumsy writing, but then you have to remember, like, oh, right, people in 1992 did need to get that reminder, yeah. or at least have it normalized that, like, yeah. people have HIV, people are gay, and it's okay.
Yeah.
That said, the entree into that is, like, Rhonda saying she doesn't deserve this. Like, what? It's not what this is about.
Yeah,
dessert.
No.
Anyway, we also see the flyer, and I don't know when they took a picture of this dog that they had for like 8 hours before they lost it, but sure, there's a picture of the dog on the flyer, so Donna doesn't have to draw this one. That's good.
I was just gonna say
Rocky IV escapes the doodlearium fate.
So Michael finds Jane on the beach and offers to help look for the dog, and Jane is suspicious in clip 7.
What about the hospital?
Well, thankfully I was rescued. Dr. Shaw.
Dr. Shaw? Have I met him?
No, and actually he's a she.
Oh. Should I be jealous?
Probably.
Oh. That's interesting.
That's pretty icy shit, given that you should probably be trying to make up to Jane right now.
Yeah. And he doesn't say anything like to pretend that he's kidding.
There's no qualifier. And then she doesn't follow up. That she's like, wait, seriously? Like, is this how married people talk now? Because, all right.
Yeah. Okay. So, but then this is what happens. I don't know what the hell gets cut. Like, if they had a fight to Wicked Game or something. But then it's like there's a cut and it's obviously later. Like, Michael's shirt is undone. His pants are rolled up and wet. And Jane is like sitting on some kind of watercraft on the beach when, with no preamble, Michael just like launches into this clip 8.
I don't blame you. I mean, how could I? I mean, the only reason you ever thought about having an abortion was because of my plan. My stupid plan, me. Sticking to that plan. When you first got pregnant, I went through the same things you did. The fear. But then we made the right choice. To have a baby. And I wanted a baby.
I needed to hear that.
I know.
Clearly, some kind of dialogue was in between there where she was like, I'm not ready to forgive you yet or something.
Yeah, that Wicked Game comment is so on point. Congratulations. there must have been something else, or they just were like, well, it's obviously a time lapse because he's rolled his pants up to clam diggers. Like, you're not good enough at this for us to get that. Sorry. No.
Yeah. So blah, blah, blah. He loved their baby. Jane is happy. And their dumb friends tell them they found the dog at a house on the beach. And I think we're supposed to think this old widow is indigent because she's in overalls and like a visor with holes in it and a bunch of disorganized stuff on her porch. But like, if she owns a house on the beach in LA, she's fucking rich.
Yeah, no, I didn't think she was supposed to be indigent.
Oh, just eccentric?
Just eccentric, or, yeah.
Yeah. Whatever. She found the dog and named it Barney, and the Melrose Cateers tell her she should keep him. And in saying goodbye to Barney, they also say goodbye to their baby, I assume. No one says that, but that's the end.
Yeah.
All right. Let's name our episode MVP. This widow who's a better dog parent than anyone we've met in this episode.
the dog who made his displeasure at the entire situation clear and wound up where he needed to be.
Good call. Least valuable player. I'm going to say Jake, even though Billy was more gross, because as we discussed, Jake should know better.
Yeah. Spoiled for choice, honestly.
Really?
I'll go with Billy, just because, as you will see in the visual aids, if you dare, he's pairing his jackassery with some unbelievably, just floridly fugly tops and blouses and like weird baseball jack. Well, you'll see. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately. Speaking of Billy, it's time to resume our reading of the Andrew Hsu article/interview from Sassy. When we last left him, he was denying that reviews like Charmingly Spacey referred to him. Andrew seems eager to prove that he is smart, opinionated, and driven, the antithesis of Billy. He thinks this generation has been stereotyped in much the same way critics and viewers have pigeonholed Billy. Sidebar, remember when like Meditations on Gen X Anomie were in like even articles about car care. Sigh, it was a different time. Quote, if you really take a deep look at this group of people who've grown up in the most chaotic time in our country's history, he says, LOL, most of them have gone through so much change, whether it's in their career or with parents and divorce or mistrust of government. I think this group is just waiting to find a little respect, a little responsibility. And once they do, they're going to surprise all the adults who think they're just pathetic. But doesn't that play into the notion that young people are waiting to be handed things, that having to support yourself isn't enough of a motivation to get out of bed in the morning? Yeah, Andrew agrees, but I think it's just fear of not being good enough. I think that they need a little incentive. Oh no, now we're in the back of the book. Dun, dun, dun. In his quest to provide one, he has co-founded an organization called Do Something.
Yeah. Quote,
I wanted to inspire young people to participate in solving social problems, he says. Andrew and his friends were inspired by a New Jersey activist named Bill Hoogterp. That's an awesome name. Quote, we got to talking to Bill and we thought his idea was cool. We could give small amounts of money and some guidance to any young person who comes up with a creative plan to solve a problem. Andrew hopes that initially Do Something will be able to dole out 500 grants of $500 each. Plans to spread the message include a special on Fox, LOL, I remember that, brochures at Blockbuster video stores, and a tie-in with the MTV Movie Awards. Major conspirators all in keeping the youth of America firmly entrenched on the communal sagging sofa. Yeah, Andrew concedes, but I think that's the nature of the beast. And that is it for this week's sassy reading of the Andrew Hsu interview. Next time on Again With This Beverly Hills 90210 edition, we get it. Child stardom is bad. We get it. Donna and David still love each other. We get it. The show will not rest until it has depicted a crappish rave in every season. But at least this one screws Kelly over in the process. Screw Your Cornea is over with our visual aids, which you could find for every episode of Again With This. And don't forget Tara's gorgeous mega post from season one of the reboot on our website. That's againwiththispodcast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at AWT90210, and you can support our Patreon at patreon.com/againwiththis. I'm Pong Adjacent Ultrasound Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Bra Over a T-Shirt, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. Our producer is Naughty Distraction Dog, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time. Every time I forget. Every time.